often you don't want to know how it's done because it might not be as impressive or as wonderful as you want it to be. But that's also because the better feeling to be left with is that feeling of wonder and not knowing.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and welcome to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that brings you everything you need to know about the talent agency world. We speak to athletes, past and present, promoters, producers, actors, marketing execs, basically anyone you could think of who has dealings with talent agents. They join us to inform and entertain you, whether you are new or old to this exciting and dynamic world. One profession I didn't mention in that list is magician, but we have spoken to one of the very best. Harry de Cruz is an internationally acclaimed magician who was inducted into the Magic Circle at just 18 and has gone on to perform internationally on stage, as well as act as a consultant for magicians like Dynamo and Derren Brown. He has a fascinating journey that started when he turned pro aged 10.
So I was doing my cousin's kid's christening and there was someone there, didn't know, family friend, and he goes, I think I told him, oh, I do weddings and parties and bar mitzvahs and that kind of stuff, because I'd seen other magicians do that. And he goes, oh, you can come do my son's birthday party. It was my son's wedding. And it was at Bisham Abbey, which I didn't realise what a grand, beautiful venue this was. So I charged him £60.
Wow.
Yep.
And I went. Wow. How many hours did you do?
Well, I don't know. I said to him, it'll be £60. Okay. Whatever you want, £60. Went and told my mum it was £60. And she was like, you cannot be charged. That's absurd. Go tell him no. And I was like, no. Because I knew what professional magicians got. So I was like, this is, you know, tight. And went along and he tipped me. And so I got £100 and that became my fee. And then I was like 10 years old going like, I'm going to have, yeah. And I did like hours and hours of his wedding. But yeah, so that, it was just naivety and bravery and always sort of aspiring to be my mentor. It was my idol. I wanted to be him. So I just sort of just tried to copy him from a young age.
Tell us about your idol who inspired you to get into magic. Who still was at your birthday party this year?
Yeah. He's my favorite person in the world.
I'll tell your girlfriend.
She knows. She absolutely knows. Everyone, yeah, you get to know me. Yeah, Paul's number one. His name's Paul Megrim, and he also is a kids entertainer. He's a close-up magician, but also a kids entertainer. He was like a local celebrity in our hometown, and he did every kid's birthday, every school, Christmas, and that kind of stuff. And I saw him as a kid, and I fell in love with him, and the magic and the wonder that he would bring everyone. Like, you know, watching, I was like 7 or 8, and watching my parents be wowed by someone is like, oh, I want to be that person. Like, that's really lovely to watch someone give that gift of like wonder and entertainment. And then he ended up mentoring me from a very young age. And so because of that, I just aspired to be him. I spent a lot of time with him. He'd drive me to like a magic club once a week. And so we'd just chat in the car and I'd hear him on the phone do his business deals. And so I learned a lot through that. And he just took me under his wing and taught me not just like the magic, but the business and life and thinking and people skills. And yeah, it's all down to him. Yeah.
And what did that relationship give you? Because obviously we're talking about relationships with agents.
Yes.
No agent could have been doing better deals than you were at 10. So you didn't need one of those. But you did need a mentor to see you through. Like, how important was that to you becoming a grown-up whose full-time living is as a magician?
Well, one thing was him teaching me that I may not become a magician was actually really useful. Him sort of being aware of other, you may not, it's a performing art, you know, you might not get bookings, that kind of stuff. And so actually helping me pursue other hobbies and passions or what could be a career was very balanced. It was really helped, actually. Gave me sort of perspective on things. So that, in a weird way, telling me that I might not is also what helped keep it healthy, if that makes sense. You know, I think a lot of young kids, all they ever want to be is a footballer growing up, but the chances of that are very slim. And, you know, sort of same sort of vibe. So it was that. Do you know what I mean by that? If that makes any sense? But watching him, like the business deals, and like he would tell a client like how it he would be advising them rather than just like accepting the work that they give. And so you're like, oh, it's about, and learning from him about the relation. Everyone loved him. Everyone on the phone with him, when you meet him, and learning from a young age was about the relationship you have with the client was really important. Yeah, and the trick, not just being the trick, not just being about the magic. Everyone loved him for who he was, and you want him at your party. All those things that I still try and carry out to this day from him.
That's so interesting, because although in my mind, actually, I've got a brilliant picture of you, age 10, whipping out a 10-year-old agent, like something out of Bugsy Malone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually really interesting.
I did wear a trilby, age 10. I genuinely did. I had a little trilby when I performed.
It's really interesting, this journey you've gone on, and this idea of, in essence, the deal starting with the phone call, because I obviously reflect, and I remember with great clarity the first time we spoke on the phone.
Yeah.
There aren't many people I can say that about where there wasn't, you know, a big purpose to the call. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God, I want to talk to this guy forever. So obviously you were performing a trick at that point. I've now discovered.
Can you explain to me how
you cast that spell, please?
Well, a trick makes it sound possibly like I was trying
like your job is deceit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's a lovely quote, guy called Carl Germain, who says, magic is the only truly honest profession because you promise you're going to deceive and you do, which is really lovely. But yeah, my job is lying, so then understandably not trusted. But with that phone call, I know more about magic than anyone else phoning me. So even though you thought you wanted a magician.
Well, actually, I had been told by a mutual friend who's a very successful actor that I didn't want a magician, that the only magician that I wanted was Harry de Cruz.
Well, that's very sweet.
So to give a bit of context, at that point in time of that phone call, it's about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So you're in your late 20s. You've been like properly pro kind of full-time magician for almost a decade.
Yeah.
You've worked with some incredible people, including Dynamo for an extended period, on some of the biggest shows that show magic in the world. And yet somebody phones you up, somebody like me who fancies their chances, and says, oh, would you do this gig for free? How do you know when to say, no, it's £3,000, and yes, I will?
That's a very, very good point. And sometimes that can bite you on the arse, and sometimes, you know, it works out just like it has. What if there was your authenticity on the phone, which really helped, and your passion and honesty for it, and your understanding that it wasn't just, you know, you get a lot of, hey, you can hand out your business cards. You get a lot of that as a performer. It's great exposure.
Yeah. You can have the opportunity to do tricks.
Yeah, right, yeah. Whereas it didn't feel like you were trying to get one over for free. It felt like there was a mutual deal there.
Money.
Uh-oh, yeah.
How did you know when you'd gone from being £100, age 10, to being many thousands of pounds, aged an older age? And how do you know where to pitch yourself at different times and when to dig your heels in?
That's a good question. I mean, there's constantly imposter syndrome with that as well. And there's also a bit of that kind of moral, or like maybe it's not even that, it's like the industry versus reality, normal job profession type thing. Like having a girlfriend who works her ass off in a bar and, you know, then I go to a gig and do 90 minutes and earn the same salary. Like, do you know what I mean? Like that. So you've got that kind of grounding, but then you also know that businesses have the money. It's kind of weird to know, but I guess the bell curve in the market of what you know other magicians are charging. So at first you start to try and work your way up those and start going, I'm going to charge a little bit more than that, a little bit more than that. Having accolades under your belt and those sorts of things, having those, being able to say, you know, head consultant for Dynamo, and being able to say these kind of awards or that kind of stuff.
Oh, you recently won an award, didn't you?
I did, yes. The London Close-Up Champion, I guess, is the title. So that'll help. That'll massively help. That's a recent thing to push, and that's a thing to add value to, and be able to say to someone, that's the cost. And also, I've never actually used this sort of analogy to a client or someone on the phone, but hopefully people can understand, well, you can buy an iPhone or you can buy, you know, a Nokia, right? And you go, well, but you don't question the value of these. It's the same with clothes, right? And I always find, I think because it's a service, people think they can, that it is plucking a number out of the air. And in some ways it is. Does that make any
sense? But I think you are making sense. I think in essence, you're almost like performing the thought process that a lot of people are going through. Because in my job, yeah, I don't necessarily know what number to say that someone will say yes to. But I do know what the value of what I'm saying is, because I've got every week hundreds of data points. So how else do you differentiate yourself when you're selling? Because even with awards, many, many people can say, you know, I can get my mum to give me an award for, you know, showing up at Christmas and then go, oh, I'm an award-winning agent. Yeah. But so a lot of people will hype up what they've done, right?
Yes.
So how do you, if a client's going, yeah, okay, but someone else who also says they've got the same accolades says they're half the price. Do you have like methods for convincing them they should be working with you?
Yeah, I'll jump on a call with them. We'll meet them for coffee. So I'll jump on a Zoom call and meet them for coffee. Because for a few reasons. One is, I say to the client, with a singer, you can just listen to a track and you know how they sound. So you go, cool, they're going to sound like that at my gig. Whereas whereas magic is an interactive art form, performance, whatever you want to call it. And so it's in your, as much as possible, my magic is going to be like in your hands or with you. It's a conversation, it's an experience. And so it's very difficult to just get that from a photo or a showreel. Whereas, so I get on a call and I try and show some tricks via Zoom or in person, because the best trick you've, I think the best trick is the last one you saw, because that feeling you remember. And so that really helps. And so hopefully that allows them to see, oh, this is the person we're inviting along to the event. And so hopefully the more I can be self-aware and understanding the environment as well. That's the other thing, is sort of competing with other magicians, is that I stand out because I'm not necessarily always suited and booted and wearing. And that's because I did that for so long. I was like 18, turning up to parties in like a three-piece suit, and because that's what I thought a magician had to be. And then I felt really out of place, because it felt like I was just like the weird magician in the corner. And so understand, learning that, and we go, oh, dress for the occasion, dress and be yourself, was a massive part of it. And so hopefully if I can just chat to someone and hopefully they like me for me, they're going to want me there rather than sort of the unknown person. Or yeah, that guy's tricks are great, but would I want to introduce him to the CEO? Would I want him to perform and you know, close the show? Or would I like that nice guy to do it?
So I think this is fascinating. So, you know, we were chatting to Nadia Ali recently about being kind of the only hijab-wearing national broadcaster. And on the one hand, you stand out. But on the other hand, it's risky putting your head above the parapet, being different. How did you have the courage, once you were being accepted for doing things the way they're done, to go, actually, I'm now going to reinvent the way magicians present themselves, because that is what is true to me?
Probably insecurity and anxiety, right? Like, as in just over worrying what people are thinking about me is a big part of it. So not wanting to seem like the odd one out at a party made me just dress like everyone else. And then the moment I dress like everyone else, they're like, oh, you're just dressed like us and you can just do all these amazing things. And I was like, oh, and then I settled in that way. So actually, it's odd. But then also, on the flip side to that, very honestly, I am just another straight white male doing magic, and there's a lot of that. And so I don't have necessarily a unique thing in terms of, there are some people who have like a look about them where like they're tattooed or they're bearded or whatever and they've got this thing. I don't have that. So yeah, so I think that the insecurity of not wanting to stand out made me work out how to be comfortable in my own skin. And once I was there, I could just be myself, and that's what sort of won people over, if that makes sense.
Well, and the interesting thing there is actually your brand, in terms of how you present yourself, how you dress, how you look, matches your magic.
Yes.
So you can say like, oh, well, that's driven by the insecurity of wanting to fit in. But actually, you're very confident in terms of your magic and innovation and trying new things. And the two do align.
As you said right at the start of this, magic is lying. And so there is a distrust. And so the more I can just be myself is a big part of it. And a huge part of it is stand-up comedy. I'm a huge stand-up comedy fan. And growing up, there was either these magicians who were wearing these suits telling stories that sort of sounded fake with props I've never really seen before. Or there's these stand-ups who are dressed like me, just in a t-shirt, and they're telling stories that sound really real and authentic and I can relate to. And so I was like, that's the vibe I want. And so aiming down that road caused me to be much more authentically myself than the magic route. So I think, yeah, being inspired by another industry and not being restricted by the constraints and the history of magic. Because magic's so niche and small, it doesn't progress and push itself as far or as quickly as other bigger industries. Also, like in comedy, there's no theft allowed in comedy. You can't steal someone else's joke. Whereas in magic, there's a little bit of kind of borrowing of other people's tricks sometimes, or building on the, you know, sort of building on other people's, and then so everything's a bit blurred. Mm. And so sort of taking the originality from stand-up and applying that to myself was a big part of it too. So hopefully when people see me, it feels like they haven't seen that before elsewhere.
My last question is, magic is one of the industries, it's not the only industry in which we work. There's also kind of gaming, there's comedy, but there's a few industries where when people get agents or representation, they tend to all stick together. And this kind of blows my mind a bit, because if you're representing 10 magicians and someone calls up and says, I need a magician, yeah, like how do you heart and soul sell that person? Whereas yes, for me, someone says, I need a magician, and I'm not going to go, well, you must have this Olympic boxer. Like I'm obviously going to say, yeah, I have the best in the world. Harry de Cruz is the one. But what made you step outside of the way things are done in that context and say, no, I'm not going to stick in the club and do things the way they're done. I'm going to take a punt because I'll be in an environment where I know more about magic than my agent does because I'm not with a specialist. But I'm going to go over here and join a wide variety of all different people.
Well, as you just said, from if they represented 10 magicians, then I don't feel special in any way, is a huge part of it. But from a business point of view, I guess, is that you know a market, you're not necessarily just in the event space. You're in way more than that. You're often in the speaking, but also in brand campaigns, and you're also involved in advertising and just so many more in presenting, and just so many more. You're across more industries than just, I think, most magicians are represented by, you know, a production, you know, an events agency. And so for me, actually, that opportunity of like, oh, maybe there's other parts, there's other sort of industries to access, and also other things to learn. So being like, I've learned way more about the world of marketing, which I've then, by doing speeches for like marketing companies through you, then what I've brought that back into my own business. And so just expanding my knowledge base was a huge part of it.
One other thing, what is the biggest myth that all of us muggles believe about magic and the magic industry that is incorrect?
Oh, I could rant about this for days. One thing is just that it is a skill that the better you are at it, the more that skill is hidden. So everything else, you're showing how good you are. Like you can hear and see a pianist play, and the more incredible it sounds, the better you know they are. Whereas actually the magic, if the simpler, the more simple it is, as in if I just said, you know, name a card and you just like cut the pack and it happened to be that card that you cut to, like if it was as pure as that, or I just held it in my hand and it vanished, that's so simple essence, but it's gonna take me years and years to learn that. So there's way more that goes into it than you think, I think is a big part of it. And it is very much like music. I describe that a lot to people, which is in music, you learn the basis of a song and how to play someone else's song. Then you might add your own versions and your own touches to it. And then you start writing your own. Some people write their own, some people don't. And magic is very, very similar to that. So there's a huge skill set to it, more than people realize. more than just balloon animals. That's, yeah, it's broad and there's so much.
Although you can do balloon animals.
I can. But that makes me. when I was like 10 to 15, I did kids' shows. Which I retired doing kids' shows. I retired from Kids Magic at 15 with a very successful sold out run of 10 kids' parties.
But that's the other myth, isn't it? When someone says, I say I represent a magician, and they go, oh, I've got a child.
Yeah.
You go, what?
That's one of the difficulties, actually, not knowing when you, even when I say I'm a magician, is knowing what version of magician pops into someone's head. Is it street magician? Is it big illusionist with glitz and glamour Vegas? Is it kids magician? Like, what is that? And so that's a big challenge to overcome, is that there's not much magic on TV. There's not many public representations of magic. And so it's hard to know what people are thinking of. And so I've got to try and like, they go, well, what's your stage name? Well, I don't have one, it's just me. What do you do? Kind of just this. Like, you know, like, so that's definitely a difficult thing.
No, I remember going to an event with you and you doing a really, really difficult trick that people just assumed was really easy because you made it look really easy. And then one of the women going, oh, imagine one day you might be able to go to Vegas. And me thinking, I think he probably could go to Vegas now if he wanted to. But people just don't have any benchmark.
No, there's not. I get told you should be on Brits Got Talent all the time.
And you're like, I actually consult.
Yeah, I help with people. Yeah. But the simplicity thing as well is interesting because that's also magic. People try and work out how it's done. They're going to try and work out. Now, I prefer they didn't because actually, if you just try and not work it out, well, I'm fine with people trying to work it out because then if they can't, there's like a bigger reward. But also, that shouldn't be the primary focus. The primary focus should be
the wonder.
The wonder and enjoying it. Oh my God, that felt amazing. But often with people, if they like, think they know how something's done, or they see a sliver of something, they think they've got the whole method. Where actually, there's so much that goes into it. There's so much more understanding of. There's a saying about like the stars have got to align as well, or, like the trick's got to work, like the physical thing itself. Let's say it's a deck of cards. Like that's got to. I've got to make that happen, but also I've got to misdirect 20 people at the same time or 1,000 people at the same time, and then it's got to hit in the right way, the right time, right place. I've got to be good enough at the same time as well. So that's why that I've got to do muscle memory of the hands doing the secret stuff, but not letting them know at this right moment on this offbeat. So creating a moment where, I cause tension and then release, and the release is when they relax and they're not expecting me to do the secret move. Like all those little things about psychology going into it is a huge part of it. Here's final thing. Not necessarily the final thing. There's a lovely saying, which is magicians keep secrets for you, not from you. Often you don't want to know how it's done because it might not be as impressive or as wonderful as you want it to be. But that's also because the better feeling to be left with is that feeling of wonder and not knowing. That's longer lasting. It's more impactful, more, life changing. And, you carry that long with you way longer. Than it's like, oh, I know how that trick's done. Yeah, it's for you, not from you. Magician exposes all. How Dynamo walked on water. Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, wine corks on the bottom of his shoes.
Really?
For a split second, you look like you believe me.
I never believed him. Honest, I think. If you haven't checked out the work of Harry de Cruz, you need to do it ASAP or. Feel free to go to one of the many shows on the West End that he's done all the magic for that are live at the moment. And in between, why don't you get in touch with us at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media or by email at gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com. While you go to watch Harry, I'm off. So for now, from me, it's goodbye.